Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. It is Dan, and I have John joining me. It's also bowl season. 9-3 Illinois going up against 9-3 South Carolina in the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. A game that I don't think anyone in America predicted would be on Illinois' schedule this year, except maybe John Bayless.
I mean, this was something where I know that we had a bit more rosy-colored glasses going into the year, but the fact that there is the potential for 10 wins, that's pretty bananas. Like that is not only, you know, going past the standard deviation of success, but that's like multiple. You're in your 95th, 99th confidence interval, and it's just, I am so happy that we have the chance to get double-digit wins. Even though, like, I don't know if you're necessarily going to turn, you know, various recruitments, or you're not going to lose momentum by losing this game. But the fact that Bielema can go out and sell 10 wins when it's been, you know, X years since the program's done this, or it's only been done Y amount of times in program history. Like, these are things that are very valuable to a marketer like him. So being able to go out there and perform and get that 10th win is something that I'm very excited about. I wish the matchup was a little bit different, because I think out of the snubs for the quote unquote snubs, because they didn't actually get snubbed, but for the snubs of the college football playoff, Bama, Ole Miss, and South Carolina, I think South Carolina is arguably the worst matchup for us, just because their quit factor won't be there and they don't quite have the high end talent that's going to be leaving for the draft. So, not to throw away the preview all immediately, but I'm a wee bit concerned, Dan. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I wanted Bama, and if we didn't get Bama, I kind of wanted Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. So yep. I guess we're settling for arguably the hottest team in the country in South Carolina, and a team that's won 6 straight. They have the freshman player of the year and their quarterback, Lenora Sellers. And like you said, there's only 2 potential opt-outs, and that's their edge rusher, Kyle Kennard, who's, you know, probably a second rounder, and their running back, Rocket Sanders, who's, you know, their lead rusher and a great running back. So aside from those two, they're going to have their entire team. But on Illinois' side of things, Pat Bryant's our only opt-out. So we're going to see our offensive line with Luke Altmaier, with Zachary Franklin, and then our defense that, you know, started to gel a little bit later in the year. So I'm excited about the matchup. I am a little bit nervous about the matchup, as you are, Lenora Sellers. I mean, let me just say, I think this guy's going to win a Heisman before he's done playing college football. He's that good. And I watched his highlights today for 20 minutes, and he is basically like some sort of combination of Justin Fields, college Justin Fields, and like he's got a little Lamar Jackson in him too, and he scares me quite a bit.
He also, I would even throw, and this is the ultimate compliment to him, because we're naming like 3 elite college quarterbacks, but his contact balance reminds me of Cam Newton too, because he's just he's such a tough body to bring down. And that is honestly what gives me the most concern about the matchup with the Illini defense, is that there will be times where Aaron Henry will scheme up some pressure and it will get there. We've seen that that's kind of like a bit of the feast or famine nature, where it's either death by 1,000 paper cuts, or, you know, you get a couple havoc plays on defense. The tricky thing with this is that South Carolina's offense is completely predicated on just explosive plays after, you know, chaos, essentially. So because you have a great quarterback with elite contact balance, with also elite speed, you're just getting like, you think that a defense has a play, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, now it's jailbreak time, and we're just, everything's gone. Like what you thought would be, you know, a 5 to 12 yard loss is now turning into like a 31 yard gain. And those are just demoralizing, not only for the psyche of the defense, but just for the fact that, like, especially this Illini defense needs those kind of plays to help kind of regulate their performance. So I am very, 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 very concerned. And it's going to take an absolute army. Now, luckily, like you said, so the opt-out thing is interesting, because I think that was maybe like a competitive advantage that we had, because Illinois not churning out the NFL talent yet is something that, you know, bodes well in bowl season, because especially like these higher end bowl season games, because well, any other team that would be in this position might have, you know, 6 to a dozen opt-outs. And now it's like, oh, well, we don't really have that many, like, even, you know, Gabe's playing. And I saw Seth was practicing. I don't know if that is any kind of signal to him being able to come back, because that looked like a pretty brutal injury. But, like, yeah, so you might have guys back, but then it kind of neutralizes the disadvantage or the advantage and becomes back to a disadvantage when it's like, yeah, South Carolina is not really having much turnover on their end, and especially at the most important position on offense. So, I mean, I guess we've got the Justin Stepp revenge game angle as kind of like our way to retake the advantage in terms of when Dan does his weird math, maybe that factors in, but I am not feeling great. But also at the same time, like, it's a bowl game, like, or you have like these weird schedules, like maybe guys aren't taking this seriously. So it I think the 10-point spread, or it's been hovering around there, is justified. But that does not mean that I think that we're going to get like blown out.
Yeah. And the other thing too is South Carolina's offensive coordinator took a head coaching job. Dole Loggins is now the head coach at Appalachian State. So with a young quarterback like Sellers, I think he's so athletic that it's going to be a hard, you know, task to try to bring him down. What you got to do is try to confuse him before the play, show different, you know, looks, and see if you can get him in the mental game, maybe force him into a couple bad throws or bait him into some plays he typically wouldn't make. So that's what I think Illinois will have to do in order to kind of neutralize a guy like that, because like we said, he's so athletic. He reminds me a lot of, you know, a couple guys we played over the last few years, and that's Jalen Daniels, the quarterback at Kansas, and Daquan Finn, the Toledo quarterback. He's slippery, and he's going to escape tackles that you think you have him dead or right, and all of a sudden he's, like you said, down the field 30 yards. So it's going to be quite the test. I'm excited to see it. Like, how often do we get to sit here and talk about a premier bowl game leading into a college football playoff game? I know it's not the playoff, but, you know, all eyes will be on our game, and it's just exciting to be in a position like this.
Oh, this is arguably one of the best non-playoff games that is out there, because of the fact that it's not only one of the premier games, but you don't have that opt-out potential like you do in other games. And so you're getting what will arguably be the best product, just because of the fact that, yeah, you have, you know, a combined, you can count on one hand the amount of opt-outs between both teams right now. And you're not able to say that about any of the other premier games with, you know, a Big Ten, an SEC team, bowl team. Like, that's one of the things that I think we can hang our hats on. But yeah, the fact that we get the privilege of being able to nitpick the fact that we're going up against, you know, like a Heisman caliber quarterback and like what that means, but having the ability to do that in December is just unbelievable. So I am not taking this for granted at all. As it sounds as nitpicky as we're getting, I love it. So I do think you bring up a great point in terms of the turnover at OC, just because of how that could rock for a young quarterback, because obviously he's on his path to becoming elite if he isn't there already. But there is something that we said about, you know, a different level of play calling ability, even if it's the same plays, you know, just not the same exact rhythm with Dole Loggins. So not with him not being there. So I feel like there could be maybe an advantage gain there. But with that level of talent that they have, I don't know if it's necessarily going to materialize, but it's just going to come down to whether the front seven can kind of hold serve and neutralize Sellers a little bit, you know, make him beat you with his arm and not his legs, which is easier said than done. But we have seen the defense kind of, you know, not step up, but when they know the scheme that they have to play, they are a little bit better when it comes to selling out for one thing. You know, it had a bit more success during the 2024 season in terms of guys who were more pocket passers and then just like chilling and letting them try to, you know, beat you without the superfluous items on the edges and all that. So it's like, I think about like the Nebraska game and how good that was when you're trying to make a young quarterback beat you, and Michigan, how good that was. But even like Northwestern, where that was something where, you know, you're dealing with a run first quarterback, so make him beat you with his arm. So it wasn't necessarily like always the same game state that lent itself to the defense playing well. But I think a clear definition of what you need to do in this game in terms of limiting explosive run plays against the quarterback and, you know, go from there. So I don't know exactly how Aaron Henry, he's got his hands full, but I guess he's got a couple extra weeks to go about taking care of that.
What's interesting to me is that this is, you know, if Illinois were to win this game and get to 10 wins, that would only be the fourth time in program history. So it'd be one of the all-time great seasons in Illinois, in the Illinois football program. For some reason, like, it feels like a great season, don't get me wrong, but like it doesn't feel like one of the four best seasons of all time. We have five national championships. I know some of those were like mathematically claimed based off some sort of algorithm because there weren't actual national championships, but like, and they also didn't play as many games back in the day, so getting to 10 wins was either impossible or you'd have to like run the table. But still, a 10 win season is such a like a monumental bar to clear. And it feels like we've kind of left stuff out on the table that we could have had. Like, I don't even know how to process it because, like, we would be dreaming of this season, you know, a decade ago or even, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Having a season like this would be the ultimate goal. And here we are on the doorstep of getting to that 10th win. And I'm still like, I don't know. I almost want more, which is crazy to say.
This is what competent coaching gets you, is we get spoiled so quickly because it's like, oh yeah, like this is exactly what every Illinois fan wants. Like I think with any other incompetent coach, you're kind of like hoping for a lucky break here or there. And then, oh, we move our floor up to 5 to 6 wins. And then, you know, you kind of hope that it's an A to B guy. And then you get the B to C guy who then is actually and it's just like, we got the guy who immediately established credibility and a floor that was much higher than even we understood. And so now I know what you mean. Like 9-3 is so freaking cool and unbelievable. And it should be something that we are in awe of it, but the fact that we are, you know, hungry for more and that we understand that there was more out there just shows you like, that the competency that the staff has, even though the talent isn't quite there, like I would argue that, and I think like, you know, second order wins and advanced analytics would kind of prove it out in terms of like, we weren't really a 9-win team. We were maybe a little bit lucky, but that also comes down to coaching. So understanding that like the coaching is what gets you there because those margins are so thin when you're dealing with similarly rated Big Ten programs, then it comes down to like, okay, well, we know that the coaching can get us there. So then where was there maybe a couple decisions that the coaching, I'm not going to say cost us, but maybe didn't gain us that edge. And like thinking about the Minnesota game or even the Penn State game and some of that, yeah, it was like, you know, fumbling before half isn't quite on coaching, but like, and I know that the Brandon Henderson touchdown was a week or two prior out of a shotgun formation on a fourth down call, the pass to him. But, you know, that then you open yourself up to fumbles against, you know, an environment in Happy Valley that is one of the toughest to play at. You know, you're marching in for a touchdown and then you have that happen on a shotgun snap when you should just be going under center most times. And so like stuff like that, like, but we can nitpick that because we know that this isn't just like some fluky thing that is, you know, okay, well, we got here. This is amazing. Like, let's all be happy and hope that this springboards us to something else. It's like, no, we know that now this is kind of like the level set and we've pushed past all the middling barriers of maybe a 6 or 7 win season. And yes, I know that we had a 5-win year last year, so maybe we do go back to that and the yo-yo continues. But I think the fact that there is kind of like a reset expectations is pretty freaking unbelievable.
I love Brett Bielema so much.
So much.
He's basically, I've just been thinking about, you know, the meme of like, look at me, I'm the captain now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, but look at me, I'm Wisconsin now. Like, yep. He has not only just turned us into the Wisconsin program that we've seen over the past decade or two, but he's also just stealing their entire defensive line and just turning them into Illini, and I'm here for it.
And me too. I don't think we need to go too much into like the whole transfer portal thing because it's obviously incredibly fluid and maybe we do an episode in like the spring or something like that. I don't know, but we don't need to do show meetings on air. But it is nice to know that like the scheme that we have is more closely aligned with like a Jim Leonard scheme. You know, he was obviously, he was a defensive analyst for us for a year. And he recruited a lot of, if not all, but a lot of the players that we're bringing in. And even if he didn't, like the scheme that they were brought in to play before Luke Fickell took over, you know, is slightly different. And, or maybe they're just not feeling like they're getting fully utilized. So the fact that they can just hop on down to Champaign and hopefully, you know, even if they didn't look great in the last season or two, I would take that with a grain of salt in terms of like, you know, PFF grades or production. And that's not to say that they're going to come out and be like world beaters, but if they are utilized in the proper way, if Aaron Henry finds a way to deploy them, then yeah, you might have guys that, you know, are playing up to their Big Ten potential. And that is very exciting. Because yeah, it's essentially turning into Wisconsin 2.0, but I think we have like a little bit better of a talent base to operate from at Illinois, just because of like the Chicagoland area.
Yeah. And Brett Bielema did win 3 Big Ten championships while he was at Wisconsin. So maybe he can bring a little of that luck, you know, with a few more seasons under his belt at Illinois. It's, you know, he's slowly just moving that floor for this program farther up. And I think the next step for us is to get to a Big Ten championship game. And then, you know, getting to a Big Ten championship game probably means you're in the playoff now with the 12-team mm-hmm. playoff. So that's the next step for this program. And, you know, it starts with retaining a lot of your players. And like you said, things change hour by hour with the portal and things could very quickly shift. But as it stands right now, Illinois is, you know, set to return quite a few of the players that were on the offensive side of the ball, as well as most of the defense. And, you know, you supplement it with a few good transfers and you basically have, you know, 2.0 version of this year's team going into next year. So, you know, the expectations go up next year and we're ready for it.
Oh yeah. Yep. And I think the interesting decisions to see are, the big three are Gabe, Xavier Scott and JC Davis, now with the JUCO waiver that has been put in place. Because to your point, like the offense, like you can return essentially your entire offensive line. And that's not to say that you still can't improve it. I think that there could be a potential reshuffling depending on either who you bring in via the portal or who shows a better development track from some of the younger guys in the stable right now. But yeah, it like you've already brought in guys to not replace Gabe, but like you can help build him in the aggregate. You know, replacing Xavier Scott would be incredibly difficult, but I also like some of the skill guys that they have in that room, and you can maybe find a transfer during the spring window. So, and that's a little bit easier to, I don't want to say it's not easier to grab a corner and have him play immediately, but in terms of like responsibilities and getting guys up to speed, they're a little bit easier to play quicker in the defensive backfield than they are on the defensive front. So getting that kind of addressed, the defensive front addressed first is nice to see. But yeah, in this world of transfer portals and player turnover, and you know, the fact that like you had Indiana last year that had crazy turnover, obviously because they had a coaching change. You had the same thing happening with Purdue. It's happening right now. All of this is understandable. But the fact that, like, we touched on Wisconsin, the fact that Wisconsin is almost rivaling Purdue in terms of their exit numbers, like, that's not to say that Illinois, we have, like, we've had some, I don't want to say significant transfers out, but, like, significant in terms of, like, the numbers that have left. Now, that's just going to be kind of, like, the nature of the beast going forward because of the roster churn. But, like, it's crazy to see that, like, a program like Wisconsin that, it you know, obviously had a pretty crappy schedule but has had better recruiting than Illinois or most of the Big Ten the last, like, 5 to 10 years, and they're just, like, sending out as many people as Purdue. It's, like, it's crazy. And I guess to our benefit, because we're just like, hey, how about all of you guys just come play for us?
I've sensed a little bit of angst about replacing wide receivers and – I mean, you and I have talked about it. Like, no one's going to replace Pat Bryant. It's going to be extremely difficult to even replace Zachary Franklin. But what you have to do is trust Justin Stepp. You have to trust the staff. And I think Aaron Henry might have said it today in the press conference, something along the lines of, like, we're the best team in the country at developing 0 stars, 2 stars, 3 stars, and walk-ons. So you have to trust that these guys that are in the program are going to develop. We've seen it with Colin Dixon. Ashton Hollins has had some nice flashes. You know, even a guy like Hank Beatty's made some big plays, and you have Alex Kapka-Jones. So hopefully we do, you know, find another transfer too. I know Justin Bowick's coming in, but, you know, maybe you find one more guy with some proven production in the portal. But if you don't, you just have to ride with the guys, and hopefully, you know, your O-line has some continuity, and it's another year of Luke Altmaier, and they can help bridge that gap where you might not have the top end talent, but you get the extra second in the pocket or a QB that can recognize coverages and he can throw guys open. So hopefully we don't have that that angst for much longer.
You raise a great point, because I think what people need to realize about the season, that it was entirely reliant on the passing offense being as good as it was. Like, if we do not have Pat Bryant and Zachary Franklin being as productive as they were, we are more in line with those second order win totals of seven or six wins. And we're not sitting as pretty as we are right now. Obviously you can look at the Rutgers game and Pat making the impact that he had there in just one play. I don't think we're going to be able to build a Pat Bryant immediately. Like, I think Colin Dixon, you look up in a couple of years and you're like, oh, he did the same. We saw the thing with Pat Bryant that we kind of saw with Isaiah. And now Colin Dixon is doing that. So you're probably trying to, make amends for the two guys leaving with Colin Dixon plus two other guys. And one of those guys is Justin Bowick. And maybe you get a Zachary level addition where it's like, oh yeah, it's kind of late summer, or not late summer, but it's late spring, early summer, grad transfer edition from, a productive guy who just feels like he needs to step up or step over. And so maybe you get three guys who help, replace that production. You desperately need it. And yes, Hank Beatty had a great year. He's going to be poised for even more of a breakout next season, because he was productive not only as a returner, but as a receiver where he got his opportunities. But yeah, you need that passing offense, because if you do bring back the entire offensive line, there are still going, and I understand that guys can develop year over year, but there are some inherent limitations with some of the guys, especially on the interior, that are going to be present then next year. And so you're not going to, your ability to run the football is going to be limited to inside zone and gap scheme. And if you're giving a defensive coordinator enough to just go off of that, that's why it wasn't super productive all the time in terms of the Illinois run game. So to the thing that you brought up, they need to find productive they probably need to find one more productive wide receiver, not a bunch of wide receivers, but you do need to make sure that you bring in enough to replace Pat and Zachary, because the galvanizing factor of the 2024 season was the wide receivers and the passing game in this offense. And you want to enable Luke to continue to build off of a great year so that, he gets drafted and then you're becoming a stable of quarterbacks where you can sell that to, another transfer or another prep because Trey Petty is the future, stuff like that. So it all ties in, but Justin Bowick, he is a great pickup. I'm very happy that they got a big body who can be a difference maker. But you probably want one more guy just to be certain, because Malik Elzey is highly touted as a recruit. But if you're rolling out there with a couple guys who are uncertain, and then Colin Dixon and Hank Beatty, it's are we really taking a step up from the 9-win season and what was already established, or are we going to yo-yo back and then have to, try and claw our way up in 2026?
And hopefully Caden Fagan is back to 100% next year. We saw Aiden Loffrey in the Northwestern game go crazy, and Josh McCray's had a few nice games as well in the back half of the season. So, you have a stable of running backs as well that can hopefully complement a good pass game, and, sky's the limit for this team next year. But one more game on the schedule for this year. It's South Carolina. It's the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl, John. How cheesy are you feeling?
I'm feeling the cheesiest, Dan.
That's the stupidest commercial in America right now.
Yeah, but I also kind of love it that now we get to be associated with that, and the fact that there is going to, if Brett Bielema gets dumped with a Gatorade cooler full of Cheez-Its, I don't have an office yet, but I might buy a house just so I can have an office, just so I can buy a framed picture of Brett Bielema getting dumped with Cheez-Its and put it just as the centerpiece.
Second only to the Duke's Mayo Bowl, Mayo baptism.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. That's a different level, but I feel like the prestige and the allure of the Cheez-It Bowl and what it means makes it maybe equal to the absurdity of the Mayo baptism.
While we're on the topic, let's talk a little Cheez-Its here. What's your favorite Cheez-It?
I'm not going to lie, Dan, I was never really a big Cheez-It guy.
Are you a Goldfish guy?
I'm not even really a Goldfish. I like a good salty snack. I like a Pringle. I like some Lay's. But potato chips were never really like the first thing I leapt at when I was like thinking snack. I was always a sweet guy who then put himself in the salty sweet blender. So maybe I would start with like a chocolate, like a 100 grand or, a Kit Kat or a Crunch Bar, and then go to like, I don't know, like a Pringle or like a Lay's, just like something to counterbalance that. And then just keep going back and forth, between the two. But I was never really a huge Cheez-It guy. And I like maybe Goldfish, but like I don't have like I'm not a huge discriminator when it comes to Cheez-Its. I like them. I'm just saying like, and I'm glad that we're playing the game. And Cheez-It, if you want to sponsor the podcast, we will edit all of this out because I will claim to like whatever you want to tell me to like. But I'll just say this, I'd be a lot more excited if the Pop-Tarts sponsor was for this bowl game than Cheez-Its, because I would be all about giving you my takes on which Pop-Tarts are the best at which ages and who I want to see get sacrificed to the toaster gods and all that good jazz. But I enjoy a good Cheez-It, but it's just not like, you know, I'm going to the store and grabbing myself some Cheez-Its.
I mean, you brought up the Pop-Tarts bowl and I saw a video of their trophy. It's literally they added a toaster into the trophy. Yep. Now. That's incredible marketing by them.
They really, I mean, I don't think Pop-Tarts was like going away anytime soon, but they have definitely put themselves back in the public consciousness by doing all this for the bowl games.
But yeah, I was always a Cheez-It guy over Goldfish, and I think the go-to's got to be the Duos, where you get the Parmesan and the sharp cheddar. Those were always my favorite, but gotcha. I don't discriminate too much, nor do I think Brett Bielema discriminates when it comes to Cheez-Its.
He'll get dumped by any kind of Cheez-It, right?
That's right. I was laughing too at the big orange Cheez-It mascot they had, and you know, hanging out with the team so they could get some videos of it. And I'm thinking of all the Kingfisher supporters now maybe switching. Maybe the new Illinois mascot for 2025 is that big orange Cheez-It.
Yeah, you got the Syracuse Orange and the Fighting Illini Cheez-Its.
We'll take that. A battle of round versus sharp, the big orange blobs. All right, give me your player of the game for this one.
All right, well, I can't be talking about how the passing offense is what guided us through the season without going back to the well one last time for my guy Zakari. As much as Pat Bryant absolutely dominated this year and drove the offense, I think that, you know, without Zakari at least taking some attention off of him, then he doesn't have as productive of a year as he did. So I'm going to have one last go with taking Zakari. I also think that he is not only motivated because it's a great program, but this is like his last opportunity in terms of the draft process. In terms of live rep production, like I know that he'll probably go to some bowl game and they'll have, you know, the scrimmage where you're going like 90% live, but it's not going to be as, you know, as live as an actual, you know, game, even if it is just a bowl game, which is a glorified exhibition. But I'm going to have to go with Zakari. We'll go, and Luke's going to be looking to, you know, dial it up too, because he'll be playing. So maybe we'll go like 12 targets, 9 catches for 133 yards and 2 touchdowns for Zakari.
All right. I'm going to do something that you're not going to see coming, and it's not anything crazy, but there's a guy on the offensive side of the ball that, you know, I've been kind of a hater this year on, but he's coming off his best game of the year, and that's running back Aiden Loffrey. Aiden Loffrey is going to be my pick of the week. I'm hoping he can kind of continue the momentum, but as you know, and people who know me know, I was not an Aiden Loffrey guy, and I'm ready to bend the knee, and I'm ready for Aiden Loffrey to run for 135 yards in 2 scores in this one.
So between the two of us, we're getting like 260, 270 all-purpose yards and 4 touchdowns. So it looks like it's going to be a shootout in this game, which I'm also here for, because if you're getting a fun time with the bowl game. But yes, I think that a lot of people had reservations, but yes, Dan was just like, I don't see it as like a running back. Like he's not even really that fast, or he, you know, takes a while to get up to. And I was like, yeah, I kind of see it, but also like he was falling forward. And so I think there was a lot of trepidation from the fan base, but yeah, you were definitely maybe the fan club leader of maybe limiting Aiden Loffrey, but hey, he got his opportunity. He's been progressing well, and hopefully this will his bowl game performance that you're predicting springboards him into an even more productive 2025 season.
And maybe even into a, a running back battle for who's starting next year, depending on how healthy Caden is coming into the season. And you got Josh McCray, who runs hard, has been a, you know, an anchor in this program for a few seasons now. So could be a running back controversy if we have three running backs who are all, you know, playing their best football.
Agreed. Agreed. What are you seeing in terms of the outlook of this game?
So Illinois is a 10.5 point underdog. I'm thinking, let me do some calculations here in my brain. Mm-hmm. We're playing in Florida in December. I don't know. We do have a lot of Florida guys on the team, so they're coming home, a little homecoming, getting back to their Florida warmth. I'm trying to think. Like, South Carolina typically plays in warmer weather than us. They're going to be a little more acclimated to it. But maybe the bigger discrepancy coming from cold to warm is actually going to help us.
Here it is, folks. He's doing extra, the Danny math.
Feel extra nice. I just can't stop thinking about those Lenora Sellers highlights and just how good he is. Like, I might have to post a clip just so people are like coming into it eyes wide open of like what Lenora Sellers is, because I don't know how much South Carolina football Illinois fans have consumed this year, but there's a couple clips from the Clemson game, which was their last game where they beat Clemson, and he was like, I don't know how he escaped a couple of these sacks, and a few of which he ended up turning into touchdown runs. But he is just so good, and I'm like, I want to pay him $10 million to come to Illinois next year. And like, as much as I love Luke Altmyer, I would drop Luke Altmyer for Lenora Sellers in a heartbeat. And
hot take.
I think he's that good. And for that reason, I'm going to go 31-21. Illinois covers. But we lose the game.
Gotta take care of the hook.
Yep. 31-21. South Carolina gets it done. But Illinois covers, and that's what's important.
I like it. I'm going to be in a similar ilk. I'm going to go with South Carolina 40, Illinois 34. So a little bit more of a high scoring affair, but like, they just match up with us so well. Like, you've touched on Sellers enough that I'm not going to keep going on, because I mean, we could do a whole podcast dedicated to just breaking down the matchup of Sellers.
What I want to say about Sellers though, real quick, is like, just so you know, you're pre-mad right now, because there's going to be a couple plays where you're like, you're so mad at our edge rushers for not sacking him. And you're, I just want you to be warned that when Lenora Sellers escapes like three defensive players in the backfield and goes for 20 yards, like, don't be mad, because we told you it was coming.
Yep. It's so funny. We're on the exact same wavelength. Cause I was just going to say, as you were talking about that, I was like, even if Gabe gets like a clean rush on him, if he, you know, has no, if someone breaks down their assignment and he's got a free rush at Sellers, and you're like, oh, this is Gabe, guy who might be going to the NFL, or at the very least is like an NFL level. Like, if he has a clean shot and somehow misses him, and you're like, how is like the biggest, baddest dude on our defense missing that? It's like, you cannot be surprised. And like, you can be upset at the fact that like, you should know that as a defender and plan accordingly. But at the same time, you're like just being an athlete and having to be reactionary. And sometimes you can't like be reactionary to a guy that's that elite of an athlete. So yeah, I am very scared of the Sellers v everyone, to be quite honest.
Like, yeah, just laugh and eat a couple Cheez-Its and you'll feel better.
Exactly. And I know Rocket Sanders isn't playing, but like, you're still having to deal with an elite quarterback threat. And I feel like, honestly, even like the coaching matchup, like, I love me some Shane Beamer. Like, not to say that Brett Bielema can't, you know, go toe to toe with him, because I think he can. It's more of just like the style of coach that they each are. I know that they're going to be like, South Carolina's going to be locked in as well. Like, whereas I feel like, you know, Alabama and Ole Miss, maybe for different reasons, might not be as motivated, even though they missed out on the opportunity to go to the college football playoff in their minds. Like, I don't know if the coaching staffs there either have enough credibility built up with the players, or the actual like gumption to have the follow through with the players to get them motivated and ready to go. Whereas I trust Shane Beamer to have them, South Carolina, ready to go and you know, feel like, well, we're showing you we were on a roll, again, in winning six straight games, like, we're going to show it in the bowl game too, to prove a point, even though I don't think they're actually proving that much of a point, but that's besides the point. So I think that you largely have like a fairly neutralized Illinois advantage at certain areas. I think the passing offense is just going to have to go off and you're going to have to get in a shootout, which is going to be fun. It'll be different than the last bowl game we saw where it was, you know, like a slugfest and you get like a random late touchdown because we're running the pitchy pitchy woo woo play and just like they get a random 6 points. But I'm hoping for more offense. I'm hoping for a win, obviously. But, you know, if we can give the folks out in the desert who are backing the Illini at cover, then I feel like that's a way to end the season that isn't, you know, terrible. But 10 wins sounds delightful.
40-34 shootout. All right.
I mean, I got to take into account that both you and I are getting 4 touchdowns apiece from Aiden and Zachary. So then add a couple field goals. And then I know 40 is kind of a random score, but maybe South Carolina misses like a 2-point conversion or something like that to try and make it like a 7-point game or at a various point in time. So, or also Shane Beamer is just like, he, you know, it's Beamer ball. He takes after his dad. Maybe he does something weird on a field goal or something. And then, yeah, I don't know.
Maybe 10 overtimes, just some bowl chaos. One of those games where
I wouldn't hate that. I'm just all for, like, I'm all for all the optics that make us look good. And I don't really care about any of the optics that make us look bad because who cares? It's bowl season. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if Brett Bielema is getting dumped with Cheez-Its, that's awesome. If it's Shane Beamer, who cares that it's not Brett Bielema? Because like, you still got to the freaking Citrus Bowl. Like, it's all good vibes. And, you know, I hope that, you know, we provided enough of a breakdown that people can go in feeling like they're a little bit more knowledgeable. And hopefully they felt like that the entire season, because it was awesome getting to break down a hopefully 10 win team. But at the same time, this is all gravy. Like, if we end up getting smacked, if it's 40-10, like, I'm not going to feel that much worse. Like, there will, the things that we know that were concerns will still be concerns. It's not anything to, you know, like, get too crazy high or low about. It's just, you could be crazy high about the fact that we had an unbelievable season. So this is a great way to cap it off.
2:00 ABC Cheez-It Citrus Bowl, number 20 Illinois going up against number 15 South Carolina. Just sit back, relax, have a couple Cheez-Its, and enjoy watching Illinois attempt to win a 10th game. Doesn't happen very often. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate the support this season. Like John said, we might be back, you know, sometime in the spring, but season 5 down at the Field Pass, right?
Yeah, wow. It's kind of hilarious that we've been doing this for a half decade and just grinding it out. And I know it was a little bit different this year with no Mikey, but I mean, the fact that we got to go on this ride and all the support that we get, you know, on any social media or, you know, the ratings or whatever have you, like, it's all very, very meaningful and we appreciate it. Whether it's, you know, 3 of you, 30 of you, 300 of you, 3,000, 3 million of you that are listening, it's all wonderful and great. And I love each and every one of you individually, unless you disagree with my points, in which case I love you a little bit less, but, thank you all. 2024 was unreal and I can't wait to come back and do it again in 2025.
On that note, as always, go Illini.